You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
It's back. I'm too excited to be excited because I'm so excited about it. So Game of Thrones is finally back. Two Swords. This season is going to be amazing for anyone who knows the books. You know you're going to be excited about what's happening. But for those of you who don't, that's okay too. Joining me tonight, the lovely Sarah Stretton.
So I too, the only word to describe it is excited. Like, I'm going to try and get my words out this episode, but, like, bear with me, guys, because I think just when you get so happy, that, like, I feel like I'm home. I feel like this is really the start of the year.
Sarah couldn't even handle their excitement as we were starting to watch. And then also, the lovely Kristen Snyder.
Hello. Happy to be back. It's been way too long.
Oh, if only the show was just all year round.
But somehow our podcast is already at number one.
Yeah, I don't know. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it.
This is our first, obviously.
That
first
just shows how excited people are for this
show.
Yeah,
that they went back and listened to our last season's podcast, I actually did, too, to get ready for the show.
I mean, Red Wedding, you have to rewatch that. And now, but be like, okay, that was what happened, so... But, guys, I'm Dave Klein, and we're going to go ahead and just jump right into it. So what we like to do is kind of go location by location to keep it organized and talk about the location specifically for people who kind of get confused as it goes back and forth. So we're going to start with King's Landing. And
most of our action was this episode, or
right.
At least most of our storylines. It's like, I feel like that's the one city we kind of still have that's left standing. Everything else is... kind of dealing with its, like, destruction.
Winterfell looked great. What are you talking about?
It's still in smoke. I mean, I think you can get just so much hints, obviously, just from the intro that they continuously are redoing and changing. And, like, the little changes you can spot there kind of prepare you for the season. So we got new focus from the beginning. But so much in King's Landing. And also so many families in King's Landing. I feel like in the past seasons, you know, there's normally like one dominating family or like maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
And now I just feel like that's where everything is. And that's because that's where the power is shifting.
Yeah, well, it's the stronghold now.
Mm-hmm.
I miss Rob.
Yeah.
You can't already say you miss it.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
You need to embrace.
I miss...
Have you not
you know
seen
what?
Advertising all over town? All men must die.
I still miss Ned, okay? But speaking of Ned, and this is important, speaking of Ned Stark, how's that transition? The episode's name is Two Swords, and this is an important title because... as we start with Reigns of Castamere playing in the background, which is the Lannister theme song, it's their song, we have Tywin watching as Ice is being reforged. And Ice was Ned Stark's sword. This is the sword that we saw Ned Stark use in the very first episode of Game of Thrones to behead the person who abandoned the wall. Mm-hmm. And then that switched hands after Ned died to Illyn Payne. Illyn Payne. I'm like, is that his name? That's right. Yeah, so many names. Sometimes I get confuddled. But Illyn Payne had it to use as an executioner's sword again. And now we learn that Tywin has always wanted Valyrian steel in the family. It's the best type of sword there is, the best type of blades. And since this was such a giant sword, great sword, Ice, he's now forged in two swords, one going to Jaime.
Well, the interesting part of that, on top of that, I thought it was a very beautiful opening, just like shot-wise, like with the glow. It was just that glowing molten red and orange, whatnot. But also, what I think is interesting, they left the second sword very open-ended as, like, a question, and it was so focused on giving it to Jaime and his, like, golden hand and whatnot. But also that when they were forging it, it almost seemed like the second sword was a little bit smaller. And I didn't know if that was just because it was going to go and Tywin was going to claim it for himself, or if perhaps it was a hint that it's going to go to his other son, obviously Tyrion, who's smaller in general. And I was like, that'd be just such an interesting, unexpected twist for me.
Yeah.
Because I think you always think he's just so focused on giving it everything to Jaime, and this was kind of like a little bit of disappointment rung through in this episode. And there's options for this second sword. He can keep it. He can give it to Tyrion, or it can all obviously go to King Joffrey.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, if he really was leaning, who knows, maybe Cersei will get some sword to go with her armor wardrobe.
So we have on the chat people already chiming in. Westeros Charlie is saying today felt a little bit too much like a Lannister show. Still loved it, though. And Hot Pie asking, what was that pelt Ty went through in the fire? And that's actually something we're trying to figure out, because it looked kind of like a rat pelt, we were all saying. But to me, it makes sense that it'd be a wolf pelt or a lion pelt, because, you know, the Lannisters are lions. Or if they're trying to be like, hey, how about you Starks? We'll throw your wolf pelt
it,
in.
It definitely wasn't a lion, because I feel like it had brown fur.
Yeah.
And it seemed too small to be a wolf.
No, it seemed too small to be a wolf.
And
I agree.
It had a very, like,
pronounced nose.
Yeah, see, so yeah. I'm inclined to say it was a rat, and why that would be what it's used as, it feels dirty, and I don't know if that's because it's horrible that they kind of reforged the sword that was Ned's, and that it should be going along down the line. It's basically stealing.
Yeah.
So
I have a feeling it's not going to stay with the Lannisters long.
Or is, like, part of it going to stay with the Lannisters?
Like, multiple of the swords or just one?
Yeah. Like, now we have these kind of pair.
The two
swords.
And I
feel like this whole episode was also not only about two swords, but I felt like it was just pairing. Mm-hmm. Like, pairing of people. Like, finding out kind of who's set up in twos. Because everyone's family is, like, dwindling and down in size, besides the Lannisters, which is why we get so much of them.
Right.
But it's like how people are just kind of finding their other halves. Mm-hmm. I think these swords are going to be an interesting parallel throughout the season to see, like, which families are in power, who's connecting, and who's in disconnect.
So speaking on this intro, Lord Bond on the chat saying, do you think people would have figured it out without the ice clips in the previously on? And that was smart of them. I'm glad they did that to give you that. But, you know, I do wonder that. I mean, just because I read the books, I know how important that it was ice. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if you'd only watched the show, that would have been harder to just catch on and be like, oh, that's what they're doing. It was ice. And they do talk about it, but it's harder. So I'm glad they did that. They didn't need those previously on for you to be like, why do they keep showing ice or that sword? So I do wonder how many people would have just recognized that.
I mean, we come from, obviously, the different side of the table. I read the books after I watched the season. So, like, I haven't, and I stayed away from book three because I knew that they were splitting it up for season three and season four. And for me, maybe it was because I was watching it with you. I got it very fast that it was, that it was Ned's and that it wasn't rightfully theirs.
Right.
But, I mean, those are what those hidden gems are for, and that's why you can watch Game of Thrones five times and keep talking about it, because there's so much to relearn and remember, and they call so much attention to their previous episodes and their history.
This whole episode was sort of like people saying, oh, this is what happened last season, and they were kind of refreshing and we're just reviewing everything, each of the characters. It felt like that a lot. But I think the audience who didn't listen to our podcast before watching this show from last season, like, you definitely needed that going into this episode to try to, like, get placement back in where everything was going on and all the twisting plots that are continuing.
Now, something you guys will have to tell me, because I actually, I didn't have time to rewatch season three, but I reread book three before I came into watching this, was that Jaime is already back in King's Landing. Did we find that out at the end of last season?
We got him entering, got, like, the Cersei turnaround.
So that's actually a big twist from the book. He doesn't come until a little bit later in the book, so I'm interested to see, for you book readers, I'm sure you're all interested to see how they're going to have that come into play. But since Jaime is already back, we have him having this conversation with Tywin Lannister, his father, and his father wants him to lead the King's Guard. And for once, Jaime's trying to do the honorable thing and stay in the King's Guard and refusing his father. And much to his father's dismay.
Would you really label that as honorable? Because for me, at first it struck that way, but then in his conversation with Cersei, which I also have so much to say about, but he mentioned, he was like, well, I can be closer to you. And I was like, we got at the end of his conversation with his father, like, what does he want? And that I feel like is kind of a miss right now. And I think that's kind of a good thing. But then he fulfills that conversation while saying to Cersei, I want to be here for you. So is it really honorable that he's staying in the Kingsguard?
I don't think it so much has to even do with Cersei. I just think he wants to be part of where the action is so he can contribute and, you know, fill the rest of that book up with good deeds. So I feel like it's that he just doesn't want to be out of the action. you know, and he wants to remain part of the Kingsguard.
That's a great point. And actually, from reading the books, you actually get his perspective in that specific, because they always go through different characters' perspectives, and his perspective was that he was tired of always being called the Kingslayer, and it was actually that book. He was looking through that book and just thinking, like, man, I want to start filling this book up with good deeds and start actually writing these good things, and I want to actually start doing the right thing for a change. He was just tired of being ordered around by his father. And actually, this scene ended a little bit differently. I'm sorry for making a lot of book comparisons, but this scene, it's just interesting to me. This scene ended, Tyrion was way more pissed off at him in the book and actually disowned him at this scene in the book.
Well, he did say he was disowned.
Okay. It just wasn't as angry, I suppose.
It wasn't like a huge blow up. And I think that fits the character that they've portrayed as Tywin in the show, where overall he remained this sense of calm and like dissecting mm-hmm. capabilities in his arguments versus it's never like that abrupt flare up of like fire.
But something that you brought up was really important, that book scene too.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I haven't read that part of the books, and I got that from just the scene itself. So no spoilers here. I just feel like he's now that I'm not really sure why Tywin, you know, is it just the fact that he doesn't have his hand anymore? Why exactly is he, you know, disowning his son now?
Well, for him, he wants someone to rule over Casterly Rock, which is mm-hmm. his birthright, and he doesn't want to give it to Tyrion because he hates Tyrion. So he absolutely basically despises Tyrion. So to him, Jaime's his firstborn son. He never wanted Jaime to join the Kingsguard. So to him, it's like, this is the perfect excuse. Jaime doesn't have a hand anymore. Let's get him out of the Kingsguard, which I never wanted him in the first place. And now I can have him be my rightful heir and start having so the Lannisters still rule over Casterly Rock. Because he actually doesn't seem to particularly like Cersei that much, as the great scene mm-hmm. from last episode where he was like, Cersei's more clever than she, or thinks she's more clever than she really is, or something like that.
And he's told her that to her face, right, that she thinks like she's too smart. I think, though, on top of that, each of the conversations he had with a family member this episode, Jaime, showed how dysfunctional and how they really don't connect. Sometimes, like him and his father being on separate page about Casterly Rock, him and Cersei being on separate page about what he wants, and just like her kind of pushing his golden hand and being like, oh, this is a solution for everything, and him being like, this is ridiculous. And then also with his son, who he just is being cast aside by, mm-hmm. like all of that's falling apart, but then you get to see his relationship with Bran, and that's where his real connection lies. And I think they're showing the audience that everyone else who's been supportive in his life is not right for him. And mm-hmm. the true person who understands him is turning out to be Bran.
Well, he's a changed man after going on a journey like that and everything he went through and kind of seeing the other side. Of course, that's going to change you and change your whole belief system and your outlook.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, actually something funny to me as a book reader is that in the books, all he'd done was joke about the Golden Hand thing. Like, well, I'm a Lannister. They'll make a Golden Hand. And he joked about it, but never happened. So to me, I'm like, I bet they did that specifically for the show so they wouldn't have to keep on editing out his hand or green screening out his hand or anything. So I bet that was a budget restraint thing. But it's smart. It makes sense. So, I mean, that to me was a very show thing. But we have Westeros Charlie on the chat saying, I'm glad they explained the Martell's roles after they arrived at King's Landing. Wouldn't have been clear for those non-book readers. And that's important. So we actually do have this next scene where Prince... we don't see Prince Oberon here, but we have the Martells, the Dornish people. All the Dornish people are arriving, including the Martell family. And we have Tyrion with Patrick Payne, his squire, and Bronn kind of talking about all the banners and who's come. And we find out a couple of really important things, which are essentially that the Martells absolutely hate... they hate a couple people. They hate the Tyrells, so that's going to be important. So Margaery Tyrells, who's marrying Joffrey. So they hate them. They don't like the Tyrells, and there's a lot of tension between them. But they also absolutely hate Tywin Lannister.
Wonderful.
Very much so. So we get that as well.
You're definitely in the right city.
Why do they hate the Tyrells? I got why they hated the Lannisters, but did they say in that little tidbit why they hated the Tyrells?
They didn't say why they did, but they did mention it. It was just something briefly mentioned about how that was there's tension there. It's just a brief line that the Tyrells and Dorne have bad blood.
Okay.
So it's brief, but it's not the same hatred that Prince Oberyn specifically has for the Mountain. So
I'm so excited about Prince Oberyn. I mean, he made a huge entrance.
Yeah.
And it's obvious he used this wedding invitation as a way to get back to King's Landing and, you know, go under wraps and in disguise as to why he's really there, which is obviously for revenge on as many Lannisters as he can.
Yeah, I'm so excited for Prince Oberyn. He's an awesome character.
He's already kind of displayed to be interesting because while he seems very aggressive and like someone who can fly off the handle every second, I think it's also going to be very calculated.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so interesting is that he's not just this, he's obviously a force to be reckoned with, but he's not a brute. He is a prince. He does seem smart. He does seem to have all these angles, like what's going on with this woman and how they set up it being in a whorehouse, but it's not your typical display of a whorehouse.
Yeah.
It wasn't just any whore. It was very calculated and like detailed. So
yeah.
I just feel like all of the act, he's going to be a good counter to the Lannisters, who we've just learned is such a cunning family.
I'm excited they have a new enemy in town.
Absolutely. I mean, now we need some more tension after Rob's gone, so we need someone new. But so here's the breakdown on what the tension actually is that essentially he has a brother who's we haven't seen for a certain reason, but his brother, the main prince, who's actually the first in line.
Some health issues?
Right.
Sick.
He has some health issues, so that's why he hasn't come, but Prince Oberyn came in his place. And essentially the reason he absolutely hates the Mountain is because his sister, Ilya, married Rhaegar Targaryen, who mm-hmm. was the king. And basically, in order to show for the Lannisters to show that they weren't on the side of the Targaryens anymore during the big war that led to Robert Baratheon taking the throne, they had Tywin Lannister laid out the order to have the Mountain slaughter Ilya.
Has that been confirmed? Because in the episode, it wasn't. It was hinted at. It was said that the Mountain did it, and through how the chain of command works, it's assumed that he was ordered.
Well,
to
right. Go. So, I mean, this is what we're finding out in this episode, that mm-hmm. he's saying, like, this is what his belief is.
Mm-hmm.
So his belief is that, and essentially it's his sister was murdered, and he believes in what both Tyrion and, I mean, obviously Tyrion was a kid when it happened, so Tyrion doesn't know anything, but basically Tyrion's like, well, I heard this, but I don't know. But this essential thing is Gregor Clegane, who's the Mountain, has raped and murdered his sister, has murdered two children who were just babies at the time, and just completely brutalized them as the Mountain is a horrible human being. And then it was wrapped up in Lannister silk, and he's saying that Tywin Lannister was the one who presented this. So if Tywin gave the order, the Mountain was the one who was the awful one who did
executor.
Horrible things. Yes. But in horrible ways. It's like he could have just killed them, but he also had to rape them and then brutalize them and all that. Wow. So it was really poorly done.
Are we surprised the Mountain hasn't changed much?
Nope.
Since then, he's just kept on going down that track. I think everyone will be... I feel like the Mountain's been talked about so much lately. I'm interested to see when he actually comes back.
So, Lord Bond on the chat saying, cannot wait for more Red Viper, my favorite character after Beric Dondarrion. So on that note, this character, Prince Oberyn, his alternate name is the Red Viper. So, that's another note about him that you find out later on. But, I mean, it's not an important note, really. So, his other name is the Red Viper. That's just what he's known as.
Seems like it's... I thought it was like Red Viper. I was like, are you going to
talk point
about
is
the
it's
Red
not,
Woman?
My point is it's not a spoilery note. That's my point. That's not a spoiler, okay? So let's go ahead and talk about Sansa and Tyrion. And we finally see Sansa again. And she actually knows at this point what's happened and explains what's happened with Rob that she's not happy about.
Yeah, she's still coming to grips with, you know, the loss of her family. But I really like that Tyrion showed up and was like, I'm your husband. Let me help. This is my duty. This is what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, he's there for her. And as we can see later on, it seems like he does like her, and he's going to be faithful to her.
But Kristen, Sansa's like, it's the only place where people don't talk to me. That's why I'm going to the Godswood. Ice Queen, Sansa.
She's done praying.
I mean, her whole family has basically been
no, I mean, she has reason to not be happy with the Lannisters, including Tyrion.
I mean,
as a tramp, as just he tries. It's so sad. He really tries to be a good husband.
I think he will be.
It's just like at this point, like they're giving Sansa these glimmers of hope. Like you do get the fool coming back and giving her this necklace. And I felt like that was supposed to be like there is still good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, you have Bran looking over and being like, I'm going to make her safe. And I just feel so bad for her at this point because I'm seeing these signs of them being like, there's good in the world. Hang on. But simultaneously, I'm like, Sansa, don't let anything good happen to you because something bad always happens to you after something good happens. So I just like, I'm like, just have, be neutral. I just want, like, neutrality for her. I don't even, like, wish for the good anymore because it just ends so horribly.
Well, I think she's going to follow in her mother's footsteps. Like, we kind of got that speech from Tyrion saying she wanted to kill me, but I admired her and she was fierce and she would do anything for her children. Like, I feel like Sansa's going to follow in those footsteps, and it's like this hard bringing up is definitely going to make her thick skin and fierce in the future.
Yeah. I just have a fear of, like, what this also was bringing Shay into the picture, and that's always been kind of a tumultuous situation. And
they're really playing her to be jealous in the show. Like, she's just getting really jealous over this situation.
And jealousy kills.
And it's all... Seriously, and on top of that, we've already known that she's willing to kill. And in the past, she said she's willing to kill for Sansa, and I'm just worried now it's going to be targeted at Sansa eventually, even though they've had a friendship and, like, a care for nature. It's like, is the woman side that wants to be with Tyrion going to destroy her friendship with Sansa?
So Westeros Charlie on the chat saying, sure, Shay sure is getting jealous, though. Sansa, Tyrion, and Shay sure have a weird dynamic. So, that is, I mean, Shay is the one who's that Tyrion has set up to take care of Sansa so she could be there, but then,
And she seemed to really care.
Yeah, she did.
She did, and now it's like... That's why I was interested that she used, like, kind of the sexuality aspect instead of her normal biting wit at Tyrion, where she, like, kind of just pushes him down.
Pulling
and
desperate,
like,
measures.
Yeah, she's changing her whole routine. And, I mean, I feel bad for her, too. They're in a very sticky situation, all thanks to lovely father.
It looks like she's in a very dangerous situation now that that maid saw her. I don't know. I feel like she's not going to last much longer, and maybe that's why she had so much screen time this episode.
And after the whole thing where we already talked about Jaime getting the Golden Hand and all that, and Cersei talking with us, we get the maid actually coming in. We don't get to hear it, but it's implied that the maid is going to be telling them what happened.
And for those of you who didn't recognize the maid, this was the same maid that Shay had threatened to kill after Sansa had her first bleed. And
looks like she should have.
Now, another thing that happened in this scene, she really should have.
Take action when you can.
Another interesting thing that happened in this scene was Cersei admits that she hates Marjorie Tyrell and calls her that little bitch from Highgarden. But she doesn't trust her. She just does not trust the Tyrells at all. So Cersei very much is starting to not trust people.
Cersei, I've always admired her because I think that she just keeps the show moving and she has such a power to her. But in this episode, with her relationship with Margaery, I just feel like she's so prissy and stuck up and like a little girl who wants to play with her toys and no one else can have any fun. Like, I don't know if it's, like, jealousy or just not wanting to share any of the power with anyone ever, but it's getting to the point that it's getting a little frustrating, and I want her to either take action herself or, like, do something about it. Because at this point, she just keeps whining and trying to backstab her, and it's been going on for a full season. Like, she just needs to...
Well, what's a girl to do in Westeros?
I think Cersei.
Learn from Arya Stark. Learn from marriage. Like, things can happen.
I think take some water dancing lessons.
I think Cersei is mainly frustrated because she's not in power and she doesn't have any control. So I think that's why, you know, she's turning at everyone and being frustrated.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, she's even turning on Jaime in this episode and being like, you're not good enough. At this point, I feel like she's maybe just so disappointed in herself that no one can be good enough. And so I just want her to step up and do something.
Yeah, and that is a big turn, though, because we have that Jaime, all he wants is to have sex with her. But he just wants to be with her again. That was his entire drive that we saw before, was I need to get back to King's Landing so I can be with my sister. I just miss my sister. I want to be with her. And she's not having any of it.
I think this is a good turn for his character, though. I think it's right that they're not going to sleep together. I'm glad that that kind of relationship isn't going to continue because I see Jaime being someone who I'm going to grow to like a lot this season and who's going to be the one doing the good deeds and hopefully partnering with his brother Tyrion now that he's disfigured as well. So I'm glad that they're not going to be sleeping together anymore. I'm glad the line was drawn because that was the one thing that was kind of holding him back.
Yeah.
I think that I agree with you that there's potential for him to, like, continue growing It's going to be annoying, though, because we see it. We see it as the mm-hmm. audience that he can change, and we understand that it's being set up for him to have a good life. But if he drags on his opinion as of now, which is still to try and sleep with Cersei and still to try and do all these things, I think we're going to have some point in the future a very big decision for him, mm-hmm. like where he is going to have to take a side and stand up even more to his family. And how long that drags on will, like, determine my level of affection for him.
I suppose we'll find out. Because, I mean, I actually don't know myself, because they're definitely structuring the season to be actually mm-hmm. a little quicker than the books, which is exciting, I think. But we have this scene. I love this scene where the Queen of Thorns is back, Lady Olenna, talking with Margaery. I just like that we actually see now Margaery, as much as she was acting coy and playful with Joffrey, she's making fun of him openly with her mother, talking about the necklace of dead birds.
Grandmother.
Or her grandmother, thank you. Yeah, her grandmother. And I just think that was great, that she actually, we find out that Margaery really doesn't like Joffrey that much.
I think that's been obvious for a while, and you know, Queen of Thorns was like, shh, you know, everyone can hear you or whatever, but, you know, she was never in this for love.
Yeah, no, she never was.
So she's playing her game as well, and that's why Cersei hates her, because they're one and the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's interesting to me, though, because I know that overall she doesn't, Joffrey's not her ideal match, but I kind of feel like she finds things she likes in everyone. Maybe it's because she's like the queen who like wants to help the poor and like be a good queen, but she is either just really good at reading people and finding like what they want most and then trying to help them get it, but she also seems like a genuine person. So it's a little strange, because I can never really tell how manipulative she is, and like, I think the heart of that is because I think she wants to be queen for a good reason.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that, because, like, did we see real moments with her? Like, I know that she, like, fed the poor and all that stuff, but, like, did we see a genuine moment of character with her?
No, I feel like, and I agree with you, Kristen, I think everything we've seen is her trying to basically win over people. She's just trying mm-hmm. to win over people. She's trying to win over Joffrey. She's always just trying to put on this appearance of being this great queenly girl who everybody should love and all that. We really don't know much about her actual character, I feel like, at this point. It's just someone who's good at pleasing people.
I guess it's because, like, the only people that she seems to actually care about are her grandmother, her brother, and, in my opinion, sometimes Sansa. And, like, when she's with Sansa, she's, like, so friendly and flirty and girly. And, like, she always feels very young when she's with the people that she likes.
Yeah. So on the chat, we have Rachel Steiner saying that she loved, or she thinks that Joffrey is starting to seem like mother like son, like Joffrey's, Cersei's starting to act so crazy that she thinks that Joffrey takes after Cersei. And Ryan Whittleson thinks it was a great scene, the look on Jaime's face when you realize who she was, or who Cersei was. So, or at least I'm assuming that's what you were referring to, Ryan. So, we move on to the scene, or actually something I want to talk about with this scene, because Brienne comes and talks with Margaery and wants to plead her case with everybody ever, that she was like, I swear it wasn't me who killed Renly. That's my only notes on that scene, but the Joffrey statue in that scene was hilarious to me. You get this statue of him looking so tough and proud and like over, with this crossbow that he loves over like dead game, and I just thought that was hilarious. It made me
like
laugh.
It looked like a direwolf that he was standing
on. Oh, was it a direwolf?
I mean, I don't know. It looked like it to me that he was standing on, but it could be just any game.
I thought it was a good reflective pose of then him in the swords room.
Yeah.
And like, it was very similar in stature. And I was like, well, at least
nice
I got
transition.
The statue, right? As for the Bran of Tarth and their meeting, I was so glad they put this in there, because for a second, I kind of forgot about their past.
Yeah.
Like, they've been so removed from each other for so long. I was glad that they kind of reconnected those dots and reminded us that, wait, they had a camp together. They, you know, in a way loved the same person-ish. So, like, I was glad that they brought that back to refresh, to show that there's a history mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. And no, absolutely. Actually, like, myself, I was like, oh, that's right. That's
yes.
right.
Yeah.
Margaery would have, like, been so intertwined with that.
Exactly. And if they had just put that, like, in the hall or, like, with tons of people, I think it could have very easily been overlooked that all of that
right.
had occurred between them. So I was glad that they brought back that scene.
Yeah. And we do get that scene with Joffrey looking so smug and talking about how he won the war. But he's just being typical Joffrey, thinking that he's better than everybody else and ripping on Jaime. But we already mostly talked about this scene, so we should probably scatter on over
yes.
the next scene. So Now Jaime with Brienne looking over Sansa, and this is something you touched on where Brienne is really upset that Sansa's still not in King's Landing, that she's not safe in King's Landing, and just this conversation where, I mean, Brienne just really having that character, she still wants to protect. She still wants to do her what she did, or her honor, what she mm-hmm. said she would do. Just absolutely needs to protect Sansa.
Who, like she said, though, like, where would they take Sansa? Where would they return Sansa to?
And it's like, Arya made the same point. She was just like, they both have nowhere to go.
They
like,
have an aunt in the Vale. Lysa.
Because people really want to go stay with Lysa Arryn in the Vale.
Look, just because she's insane doesn't mean anything. That's the one from season one who had the moon door with the baby that she was, or the kid. Not even a baby, like a 12-year-old kid who was still sucking on her nipple.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's just a little crazy, so what?
Yeah, they'd all be really happy there in their sky cells.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have anywhere. I don't even know. I'm, like, lost for them.
Yeah.
They need to reestablish a home.
I think Brienne should just stay nearby. That's the best she can do.
Definitely. That's definitely, I agree with
Maybe
that.
Maybe Brienne should get a castle and then all of the stars can go stay with Brienne.
Well,
I think that this should happen.
If she married someone, then she'd just go home, but she won't do it.
Maybe she'll marry Jaime.
Maybe. I still think that they might
there's
have
potential.
This potential.
There's chemistry. Potent.
Absolutely potent. So
I can smell it.
Take a whiff of that. So Sansa then is being followed as she goes into the Godswood. Mm-hmm. This is what you were talking about, Sarah. We get Ser Dantos again.
Which is funny because, you know, Brienne was just saying, oh, she's not safe here. And then, like, she's, like, running around in the garden. So that was nice to see.
Yeah, and this is the Godswood. And, yeah, absolutely, running away from someone. And it turns out these Ser Dantos, who was in season two at the very beginning, this is who, during Joffrey's birthday, he was having a joust, and this was the drunk person that Joffrey was going to have beheaded. And Sansa said, no, just make him a jester because he's not, because he drinks a lot. So
and
she basically.
It's a curse to kill someone on your name, Jay.
Yes.
It's like a bad omen.
So she saves his life by doing that. And now he's trying to repay her, and doing so gives her this necklace as repayment and wants her to wear it all the time in honor. So.
Honor his name
and
one
honor
more
his name.
Time in the sun, which I really like that necklace, by the way.
I thought it was pretty. I thought that this was like a good, I guess,
your necklace kind of looks a little like it, actually.
Not really. That one was blue, and it was like stones, and I really want it.
So things that we can replicate from the show for real life accessories. Wonderful. But I think that this was a good scene for a glimmer of hope.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
It'll be interesting if he... I feel like they tend to reuse characters, and obviously mm-hmm. he's back...
For a reason, hopefully.
I feel like he has to come back again, mm-hmm. or else I'm kind of going to be like, that was the most pointless scene. For a show that has so much content and so many plot lines, and, like, literally they use just, like, every second they have. Like, you can't have a scene that's just there for, like, hope. Like, you can do that in a sentence, so...
It's not pointless. I'll just say that. That's all I'm going to say. It's not pointless.
I definitely think he's going to sacrifice himself
for
her
in the future.
I'm not saying anything. It's just not a pointless scene. They know what they're doing in the show. So that's all I'll say with that. But that sort of glimmer of hope does end us with King's Landing. So we move over to the Wall. And at the Wall, or sort of before the Wall, we get outside the Wall. Ygritte in a bad mood now that her man is gone. Talking with Tormund Giantsbane.
I was like that. I like that he said, you know, if he got away, you let him walk away. Because we were really not sure, I felt, like, if she had intended on killing Jon Snow whenever she shot him with all those arrows last season. Mm-hmm. And so it was nice to know that, you know, she was shooting accurate on purpose and knowing that he'd still live after torturing him.
That was a nice scene.
I think that... I think it was one of
those... I mean, she still shot him, but not to death. She didn't kill him.
I almost feel like it was one of those things, like, she didn't want to deliver exactly a death blow, mm-hmm. but she shot him enough that it was a possibility, so, like, even herself could be like, I don't know what's happened, like, let kind of fate decide. Like, I didn't shoot him through the eye, so...
yeah.
Whatever, you know, but there's a chance that I still think she thinks he's dead.
No, I think she was like, you know, I feel bad, you need to feel bad. So.
But I actually really like Tormund Giantsbane's character, too. He's, mm-hmm. he's like a big, fun guy. And then we meet those... The Thens
with the scar faces.
They were scary.
And the cannibalism.
Yeah, those are the wildlings you don't want to cross.
Whose arm was that?
Just someone, some crow, just someone from the wall. It was just a crow from the wall. So
it seemed like it was supposed to be important and...
Yeah, well, I mean, they've been raiding South. So the key thing here is that we have more people than just... This isn't the only party that's not bypassed the wall. The Fens have already bypassed the wall and killed Crows and come up from the South. So clearly they'd already been raiding and killing people, so there's going to be an even bigger army coming to the wall to attack.
It's like... I really don't like the Fens, so if their army dies, like, I'm, like, totally fine with that. Like, see you later. But... I don't know how to, like, feel about this. Like, I think that, obviously, we know that Mance has united everyone because of the fear of death of the White Walkers. And I think that here we're kind of seeing the hardships of uniting the clans.
Yeah.
And I think we have grown to like Tormund Giantsbane, even though he's trying to kill Jon Snow. But I think we're going to see more of them fighting. And I'm, like, I feel bad for them because I feel like they can't really win against the Fens. The Fens seem like one of the most brutal forces we've seen so far.
Yeah, they do. And, I mean, also the fact that they've got now... We know they have giants, too. So it's like they have Fens, which seem absolutely brutal. They have giants. So there's a lot
The giants are fine.
Problems.
The giants are nice.
They're not Fens.
That's I'm fine. Excited to see, like, the different sectors of these groups, because it seems like they all have their own theme going on. We could just have a party, and everyone comes as a different, like, Lance Raider.
It is a cool factor, definitely, just how many different types of groups are together. They're not all just this one type. I mean, they are so very different.
Culturally diverse.
Yeah.
And they do that with every family and every city that I've brought to this show.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, also with bringing the Dornish, they had their own style of dress, and that's coming from the far south. Like, they continuously are including new styles
and
of dress.
And Dorne is sort of a desert land, for people who don't know. It's very much a desert area. That's why they dress that way.
It'd be nice if we still did that today, but we really all look the same.
Yeah, well, it's because, I mean, you know, because now we have houses with air conditioning and heat, so it doesn't matter as much. Whereas, like, here, it's like, if you live north of the wall, you got to be able to survive these harsh winter conditions.
But
so you live for that.
By color,
you live
by texture,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Everything, every detail they put into, like, the fact that, like, they've scarred all of their
faces.
It
also shows how great the costume designers are on the show, really.
Absolutely.
But we find out we're back at the wall itself, and Jon and Sam are both at the wall here. They've both made a return. And Jon is under trial under Janice Slint. Janice Slint is pronounced Janice Slint, I believe. But Janice Slint, who was a former Kingsguard, or was it King? No, City Watch.
He was the City Watch.
He was the leader of them.
He was either lorded or knighted by King Joffrey, I think, himself. And then we had him banished by Tyrion,
yep.
In that it, like, very low-key shipped off.
But essentially, Janus Slint was, he was very crooked, and that's why Tyrion shipped him off to the wall.
He killed the babies.
Yeah,
he killed
all the babies, and he's kind
he's a
of...
a baby killer.
Bad dude. And then Sir Alistair Thorne, who had been the one to train Jon in arms at the beginning and hated him. So two people who hate him are kind of in charge here. And we have the one voice of reason, which is Maester Aemon. And Maester Aemon finally, like, pitching in, and Jon tells them everything. And Janice Slint and Sir Alistair Thorne don't care. They want to see Jon gone and hung, but Maester Aemon prevails for today. So Jon can help out as Jon tells them that this giant army is approaching. We should really focus on that, guys.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to hanging me, let's focus on the fact that maybe we need men to fight this giant army.
It was nice to hear that it's okay if he, like, lays with a woman.
Yeah.
That they all sort of have broken the code in that regard. So.
But not with the enemy. You never sleep with the enemy, Kristen.
I mean, it's good strategy, if you ask me.
I thought that was...
I feel like the scene with Jon, as well as the scene with Tormund, kind of made me switch sides. I think I'd always been rooting for Castle Black to, like, band together and fight the White Walkers. But with these two leaders kind of taking over, I'm not on Castle Black's team. Because now I'm more fearful kind of Jon being with them than when he was with... on at least Ygritte's good side. And, like, I want them to defeat the White Walkers overall. And if they're under these two guys' corrupt leadership, they're not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And so I want Jon to be aligned with the force that's going to let him live and who is going to be at least true to their word and good people. Right now, the Night's Watch is not being ruled by good people.
Well, I mean, I think it's just you see how gray everything is, and mm-hmm. I think that's what's so fantastic about this show, and even with what Maester Aemon said about how John broke his vows, but, you know, everyone's broken their vows, like, even though everyone makes these vows. And then the fact that, like, okay, well, you have the wildlings, and there's the good wildlings that we like Ygritte and Tormund Giantsbane, but then there's the Dens, who seem not so great. I mean, even, like, the Lannisters. We all like Tyrion. He's a great guy, but then Cersei's like, I don't know about her. So, you know, like, there's so many different colors for every area, and there's good people at the Wall and bad people, and that's what I think the show does such a fantastic job showing.
I'm just glad that Jon's reunited with Sam.
Because that was the true love.
Yeah.
Bros. Yeah.
Exactly. We need to see that bromance on screen. And it was nice that Sam was kind of paralleling how he felt, how John felt towards Rob, and that's how he felt towards John. And it's nice that, you know, John's going to have someone by his side again.
Absolutely. I mean, you need that the brotherly, the brothers of the Watch. They're brothers. And it is nice to have Sam with him, too, especially for Sam's character. I like when they're together. But that does wrap up the Wall. So before we talk about Daenerys Targaryen with those gigantic dragons, I should mention the fact that...
One gigantic dragon. Okay. The other two are not nearly as big.
But they're
big.
Still big. They're still bigger than before. But before
they're
we talk...
They're definitely dangerous.
Yes, definitely. But before we talk on that, we should mention that AfterBuzz TV finally has an app available. So for you guys who were kind of having trouble on iTunes, always searching around trying to find... the AfterBuzz shows, there's actually an app now, so you can just download the AfterBuzz TV app, check out all your favorite After shows right away, real quick, real easy, and download and listen to all of them. So make sure to check it out if you guys are AfterBuzz fans. It's really easy. It's quicker than the whole iTunes method. I highly recommend it. And on that note, if you guys would please also rate us positive or negative, it really helps us out just so we can see what you guys like, what you don't like. If you guys are pissed off at me that I'm making too many book comparisons, let me know so I know. Or if you guys like that, let me know so I can continue. It's always kind of a hard balance with that. But do let us know what you like, what you don't like, and so we can try to make the show better for you guys. And yeah, we'd definitely appreciate that. So,
of course,
with that... Daenerys.
Woohoo! Yeah.
I feel like the bigger her dragons get, it's just kind of paralleling the fact that she's not in control as much as she thinks she is anymore. Like, because she's losing control of the dragons. Like, she's possibly losing control of, you know, the war that she's fighting.
I mean, that's a lot of people to suddenly have out of nowhere. She went from zero to hero, to quote Hercules, the Disney movie.
Great song.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's interesting because I want to look at the positive thing mm-hmm. and think that, oh, the dragons are like her children. And everyone knows that children go through their, like, terrible twos and their bratty phase, but they really love you and they're still going to be your kids.
Or
they're
acting like teenagers right now and rebelling.
Something, but, like,
they kill your friends.
I'm like, they're going to come back. They're not going to do any real harm. They're just going to, like, push the limits.
But,
of I don't know.
But Jorah, the dragon master, who's never seen a live dragon in his life, says Jorah informs Daenerys they cannot ever be tamed. You can't not tame a dragon.
But let's think about the Targaryens real quick when they had the original dragons and rode them around and controlled them and won wars. Wouldn't that be controlling them? Hasn't it been done?
Yes. But this is a new art. No one knows. No one can teach her the art of mastering a dragon. She has to teach herself.
She mothered them.
Yeah.
It can be done. It's not
impossible. I feel like they're getting out of control, and I honestly feel like they might kill someone that she loves.
Yeah, we'll see.
Loves? I mean,
yes.
Meaning?
I don't know. Someone really close to her and important. I feel like the dragons might accidentally
kill them. Dario?
The new Dario. Yeah, that's an important note. So they switched the actors for Dario, and I'm kind of curious as to why, if there was a scheduling conflict or what it was.
No, I think I know what it is. I think that the dragons actually just burn his hair.
Yeah, his hair is totally different. He looks different. Before
darker.
Before he looked more ethnic, which also made more sense for where they were, and now he's definitely more white-casted. And I don't know.
He looks like Jon Snow.
Yeah, and I don't know why that was, because honestly, like, to me, I was like, that's how I imagined Dario looking before, from reading the books and even just from where they are. They're in a desert land. Like, you're not going to be, like, pure white, like, you know? So I don't know why they made that change. I'm curious to what it was.
We're going to have to do some looking and get back to you guys next week about where Dario went.
The real Dario.
Now Dario is.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe he's one of the, what, men of a thousand
faces. That's what I was going to say.
Maybe he's like, now I'm this.
Change the actor every couple of episodes.
So, Broker, it's on the chat saying, I love the book comparisons to B.R. Fernandez, saying same here. So thank you guys. I'm glad you guys at least appreciate it. So we'll see what everyone says, but thank you.
I appreciate it because I'm not going to ever get through all these books.
Oh, goodness. We do not have a ton of time left.
Well, then let's rush through. I mean, the rest of the storylines aren't too long, so let's go ahead and talk about the Unsullied. Speaking of Dario, he's gambling with Grey Worm, the leader of the Unsullied, which we see all there, and I'm actually surprised to see Grey Worm gambling. I thought they didn't care about money or anything like that. Although what they're gambling
for... They're
learning
to be free people.
Yeah. What they're gambling for, though, is to ride with Daenerys, who gets to ride with her at the front, and... That's kind of sweet, though.
It's very sweet. It's endearing, and it shows that she has the love of her comrades and her followers. It also was allowed her to, like, stomp them down and be like, no, I'm the boss, and you will just do whatever I say.
Yeah,
I don't
she's
care
such
about
a dude.
Your stupid bet.
She's a dude. I bet she would win. I think we should bring swords next time and just see who can
win. Yeah, we'll do it the whole after show. We'll be carrying, holding up swords.
You're going to win.
I think so, too.
I got too many notes to flip through. I'd be like, hold on, let me flip through my notes with my elbows. But that's where we meet the new Dario, and then Dario coming as Daenerys is discussing Meereen with Missandei. Dario Naharis comes to try to win over Daenerys with the flower act.
Oh my gosh, I really didn't like flowers. I also, for all intents and purposes, did not like the color choice of a blue rose, a red poisonous something beautiful flower, and like a little white weedish flower. I was like, I don't know what this is supposed to be symbolizing.
That she's all of those.
But I was a little annoyed at that moment.
I think, like, it is good strategy, though, knowing that this is poison, how they can use it in the war.
Maybe I just don't like him.
I think you missed the old Dario.
That could be it. It could be like, I feel lost.
So, speaking of Dario, Westeros Charlie on the chat saying, I'm a little muffed they changed the actor for Dario Naharis. Had to explain who he was to my friends. And yeah, it's kind of weird they did choose that. But yeah, after that scene, we get a pretty notable scene here where they walk up and see a dead child. I do want to explain this for you guys who only watched the show, what this was specifically and what it represented, because I don't think they did a great job explaining it. That dead child was pointing the way to Meereen, which is where they're heading to. And it's actually a slave. This child was a slave. And the whole point is, since Daenerys sacked and freed all the slaves where she was before, Meereen's also a slave city. And they're kind of pointing out, like, well, you're not going to have our slaves. And just to spite you, this is what we're doing. We're going to hang dead children and point, like, oh, yeah, well, this is our city. And we're going to be prepared for you. So that's what that represented.
It's definitely a warning. I got that it was, like, a warning. And they're not unprepared for her. And they're going to stand up and they're going to pose a fight. And they're doing it at the cost of innocence. And this is, I think, just adding fuel to Daenerys' fire. But it all...
No pun intended.
Yeah, Westeros Charlie myth is what you meant.
I'm just so funny. No, but... So it was 163?
Yeah, 163.
Markers and...
One every mile.
One every mile. So I'm sure that this number is going to either come up again or we're going to see some reference to Daenerys' attack back.
So let's go ahead and move over to Arya. And Arya's riding with the Hound still, and Arya is still super pissed off at the Hound over everything, but now she has nowhere to go, as you talked about before, Sarah. And the Hound explains, like, well, we can go to the Vale, which is where her aunt is, who's Lysa Arryn, who, yeah.
We'll just shake our heads and look away.
But they end up at this inn, at this pub, where they meet Polliver, and Polliver was the one who killed Lommy Greenhands at Harrenhal, and one of the people that Arya doesn't like, and they have needles, so... giant battle erupting over this as...
after a little bit of talk about some ponies.
After talk about F the King!
Chickens, horses, and a needle.
They make the Hound really likable in this scene, I gotta say. I love the Hound in this scene. He was great.
I liked that they gave him so many times to react, and he just still kept drinking. Like, every, I guess, point that you think could anger him, whether it was the fact that they were supposing he was sleeping with Arya, or about his brother killing people, or about the king, they literally had to hit every single one of his buttons to get him to react, and it wasn't even a crazy reaction. It was very controlled, and I loved how they stood up together at the beginning of the fight scene, how you get Arya and the Hound both simultaneously standing up. He still does this wicked fight scene. And then in the end, they come together and we see Arya's shift. But I thought it was a great setup followed by great action. Like, it was probably my favorite
Yeah. Lots of suspense and tension.
I love Arya so much. And Westeros Charlie saying Arya's payback for Lami was awesome. So perfect. And I hope they hint at things to come. But yeah, we see her really flipping that switch here and making, I mean, we've seen her kill before, but now once again, just really brutally, as she gets Needle back, really brutally finishing off Polyver. As the Hound did most of the work, but she does help him out in the end.
It is scary, though, that switch we get, because they do a lot of reaction shots to her, seeing what's going on. It's like she's kind of, like, taken back and almost scared.
Yeah.
And then she does this switch where she sees a blade and she takes action, but it's, like, a completely different girl.
Yeah, she looks so deadly. Like, you look in her eyes and it just looks like she doesn't care.
There's, like, a hint of a smile.
Yeah, like, this is great. I'm glad I'm doing this. But that's the name, one of the names that she's been saying every night as she goes to sleep. So as was the Hound, but that's also a good note for this point, is that she also still hates the Hound, but decides in this moment to still stay with him, not do anything to him,
and fight
just
with him.
Right, fight with him.
And I mean, it's a good parallel to the opening. We get the two swords in the Lannister's hands, and then we end with the two swords, her regaining Needle and becoming the second sword to the Hound.
Okay, so we have on the chat Rachel Steiner saying there's a rumor it's because the actor landed a new role who played Dario before, and he's been cast as a lead character in the new Transporter film. Which, I mean, I guess a lead is a big role, but Game of Thrones, come
yeah,
on, it's
come
bigger.
Come on, man. Game
way
of
bigger
Thrones.
To be.
This is what are you
the
doing?
Yeah.
Game of Transporters.
Like, you work around
what?
Game of Thrones.
What is that?
And Lord Bond saying on Arya's note, Arya's becoming a cold-blooded killer. She kind of is, but I still love her. She's
yeah,
amazing.
I love a villain's backstory. Let's see it.
What we haven't gotten from her, and what was mentioned in this rising partnership between her and the Hound, is what he said at the very beginning was that he has a code. And we kind of haven't gotten Arya's code yet. And I think that's, like, we don't know where her line is drawn about, like, who she will kill and what she will do. And I think that we're going to discover that with their path together.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think she's still figuring it out, you know? Mm-hmm. She's still young. And, I mean, this is something, I guess, like, you can, from reading the books, you can draw on. But the thing is, like, she still kind of views the world as very black and white. Like, they're good guys and they're bad guys. Like, to her, the Hound still murdered, as she said in the beginning. He still murdered her friend, so he's a bad guy, even though the Hound has all these very complex layers. So she's still very childish and doesn't see these layers quite yet. And I think that's a lot of what it is, is she just sees, like, you murdered a person, so you're a bad guy. And she starts murdering people, not realizing the complexities involved and, well, what's this turning her into? So I think there's a lot within that. Definitely.
We still have to figure out, like, do you remember when the Red Woman saw the eyes looking out of Arya's eyes? Does anyone remember that? And one was blue, and one was green, and one was, I think, brown. We haven't confirmed those kills yet. Well,
yeah,
I'm sure it will come back.
I'm excited to revisit
that.
I'm sure
it will come back.
Well, are we going to roll into predictions?
We should roll into predictions. We shall. Quick. So let's go ahead and talk about predictions real quick.
And now, you're after Buzz TV.
I think that Shay is in danger. I think that there's going to be a lot of murder this season, and I think next week Shay might die.
I think that Shay and Tywin are definitely going to eventually get a face-off. What I thought was an interesting line is that Tywin said that he doesn't think he will ever see Casterly Rock again before he dies. And that's very interesting to me, because I think he's probably right, and I'm wondering how quickly that's going to come about. So I think we're definitely going to see the end of Tywin in the near future, just because that came out of his own mouth,
right.
And he is known for being
so smart. Foreshadowing his own death.
So that's where my interest is.
I like
also,
that.
Podrick. I don't know why, but I always just find him so fascinating. They always add in these little turns of him being just like, either really smart or a really good lover.
Yeah.
Or like something. And so
he's just very, like, he's very shy, but he's actually a lot more skilled at things than he realized. So he doesn't have that confidence yet. So we see just from the previews, the wedding is coming, which is going to be awesome. So the wedding we're going to see coming. I guess it looks like next week we're going to see Bran again with Hodor. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see his story return and Stannis' his story going to return. So. But, man, the wedding, that's going to be really exciting stuff. So another wedding! Yeah!
Because those end so well.
Yeah, the red wedding, nothing bad happened. Wait, let's... So, speaking of Starks, too, I do want to thank Cody Stark. He's the host of Good Day Sacramento. He had me on his show this morning on Good Day Sacramento. So thank you so much to talk about Game of Thrones and AfterBuzz TV. So I want to give a shout-out to Good Day Sacramento. Thank you so much for having me on, Cody. I appreciate it. Another Stark, he was like, why do Starks keep on dying? So,
running out.
Right
I'm
out.
Trying.
But guys, that's going to wrap us up. Thank you so much for joining us for the season premiere of Game of Thrones. I cannot wait to see what they do for the rest of the season. I've been waiting all year, so finally the wait's over. Once again, guys, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That's K-L-E-I-N.
There we go. And guys, I'm Sarah Stratton. You can find me here every Sunday. Also, you can see me on Anatomy of a Movie and one of our other affiliate podcasts.
I'm Kristen Snyder, and you can follow me at Cinematic Escape, where you can check out my blog, Cinematic Escape.
See you guys next week. Later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
See you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.